Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hillstring Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
We got a guest today, Woody Overton.
Yeah, the guest.
A special guest.
I came all the way in from Dallas.
Yeah, that's right.
But Louisiana native, born and raised, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, sir. Want to introduce yourself?
I'm George Thomas, brother of Steve Thomas, the kid that C. Murder is convicted of killing. Right. And thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you coming in. It means a lot. And we always told y'all on Bloody and Gold, we're going to give you something different. And today is a fine example of that, right? And we tell a lot of uplifting stories, yours, and we tell a lot of the bad ones and some funny ones and whatever. And we do a lot of talk about different crimes and things that have happened,
we could run the gamut. We a lot of our stories, we've had guys in here that were released when they changed the law to where if you're a juvenile, you become eligible for parole if you're serving a life sentence. We actually had the first guy ever released come on the show, and let me tell you, real life Andy Dufresne.
Yeah, bro.
As they say, that guy was.
And he's helping prisoners
put together.
But one of the main things we do, and I try to do in my original and everything else that I do, is because I worked the crimes and I've seen the bodies and I've had to tell the family members, your loved one's never coming back. We always try to do justice by the victim and of the crime and tell the story, good, bad, or indifferent, right?
Yes, sir.
And I think that's important.
It is. And this case that we're about to discuss, we've done an, you know, kind of an episode at a bird's eye view of it and just gave details, right? Now we have someone on the show that is obviously very closely affiliated to this case. And I want to say this, and we'll lead into what's going on, what's going down with this case and what's going on. But, you know, it may surprise people, but I'm a huge fan of gangster rap. And I can actually tell you, you know how they say music can, you can almost put yourself back in that time. I can right. tell you two things beyond a shadow of a doubt. Where I was when I first heard Garth Brooks, of all people, and where I was when I first heard Eazy-E. And when I first heard Eazy-E, I was in eighth grade. I was at a track meet, and I was getting ready for my event, and I saw my friend, and man, he's moving his head. And I said, what do you listen? This is back in the time of Walkmans, y'all. Right. This is like tapes.
Set tapes.
Yeah. I said, what are you listening to? He said, you got to hear this. It's hard. I listened to it, and it was Easy Does It by Eazy-E, and I was hooked ever since. And I'm a, you know, Ice Tea fan, Nightmare Walking, Psychopath Talking.
On all of it.
The original gangster rap.
Right, the original gangster rap. It's funny, you know, of course, I'm sure we're all the least racist person in the world, but I'm not a white boy from the country, you know, getting down to NWA and everything else.
I like country music, I get it.
No, okay. So we're going to get into this because it leads into rap music and those things. And first of all, you're from New Orleans, born and raised there?
Yes, sir.
Very good. And your dad, let's talk about him for a second before we get into this, because I found this fascinating. Ricky Bono's, which is a family of restaurants pretty much, sir, in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Your dad had a long history with them. He's cooked.
It was the head chef for 25 years for Mr. Ooh. Vincent Riccobono.
Trust me, good food, y'all.
Great food. If y'all ever in Metairie, stop by Riccobono's.
Or go by your dad's house. Either way.
either one.
For real.
No doubt about it.
So the tip, I'm going to go back just a little bit more in history. Tell me about your family, like your brothers and your parents and what it was like growing up. I know y'all moved across the river at some point.
But so we grew up uptown off Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Then they moved across the river.
Right.
Home, sort of like I always said, whatever dad did in the streets, he never took home.
Right.
So he was going to make sure that you respect mom.
Right.
So it was mom who more so raised us on the inside. The cooking, the cleaning, to make sure that you go to school.
Right.
But we all get fascinated with our environment, like my brother was talking about with the gangster music.
Yeah.
And then finally, once you outside off the porch, you're like, okay, I want to start experimenting some of this stuff because these seem like the cool guys.
Right.
Where as a kid, you seem like a square. I don't want to make the good grades, you the nerd you get picked on. Now, as a grown man, I want to be a nerd. Exactly. Let me embrace that right now.
For real.
But as a kid, it was different. So you get off into like a lot of BS. So I got into wanting to sell drugs, wanting to
being in the streets.
Knowing I ain't had that to do. I had two loving parents, but I still wanted to do it.
This is excitement and you know, the lifestyle, right?
Right.
And everybody else is doing it. And especially, what years are we talking about? The
late 90s when I first got arrested.
Rolling. Yeah. Yeah. So and that was really the, you know, pretty much the crack epidemic wasn't over by any means. And the meth really hadn't started as bad as it is now. But you're out in the streets and got a little trouble?
Yeah, got a big trouble. So
there's no such thing as a little trouble, right?
You're right. Yeah. I was about to make 15 and trying to sell crack by a school zone.
Mm.
And then I get arrested and I get 2 years probation.
Okay. Yeah.
So I get the distribution charge. I get the school zone
charge. Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm thinking I'm about to get shipped to LTI, to Gladiator School.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's what I always called it, the training grounds, the college for thugs.
Right, right. But thank God I had got probation and I was kicked out of school. They wouldn't let me come back to school because of that.
Right.
So I ended up getting a GED and I ended up graduating like I was 16. So I had nothing else to do. So my probation officer asked me how I felt about the military.
Right.
So I have an older brother, my dad's son, but not my mom's son.
Right.
And he had joined Desert Storm. So he always came home with
I was in the same time.
Yeah, 11 Bravo Infantry Unit.
I was that's an infantry unit. Yeah, I was a 54 Bravo 20, which was nuclear, biological, chemical warfare specialist. Signed it just to teach them how to use their shit. They're, you know, they're part of my French, their stuff. Yeah.
So sorry, we speak French here.
Yeah, me too, me too. Okay. So brother would come back and I was like, I wanna do this.
Right, right.
I wanna do what he did.
Right.
So it was a Navy recruiter who actually came to the house. And they were like, okay, if you sign up, you come here, you travel, you see the world. They give you the pitch. But I was already sold because of my brother. So I was like, I want to do it. I want to go. In my mind, I was like, don't go. And I should have listened. But again, everything happened for a reason.
Right.
So I ended up going to Great Lakes, Illinois, where I went to basic. And upon coming home, somebody I had a great bond with, she was a stripper at the time.
Yeah.
And she told me about this guy that had abused her, raped her, beat her, whatever. And she was afraid to tell anyone. You know how the story goes, being an ex-police officer. So I took matters into my own hand, young hothead. Yeah. And I go over there and I try speaking to him calmly, but French words may have came out when I approached him. And he pulls a knife on me. So when he pulls the knife, I take the knife, I stab him, but then I have a gun on me, so I shoot him.
Right.
He didn't die, but because I had the upper hand, and said I did too much stuff, which is true.
Yeah.
Young hothead.
Yeah,
and because of being in the military at the time, I get a federal charge.
Right.
So I get shipped to Leavenworth until the case is
affirmed. I don't know if I've ever met anybody at the time of Leavenworth.
Yeah, so I'm here now.
Yeah,
so
that was tough, though.
How long were you there for?
8 years.
Yeah. And I don't think study prisons a lot, et cetera. I don't think people get the concept of what it's like to be in a military prison.
Yeah, it's worse.
It's worse than being in Angola.
Right. It's because everybody's already military minded.
Right.
So you come in here and it's like a strategic plan to keep you
It's almost like a long running bad boot camp.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's like being stuck in basic forever.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Wow. Crazy.
And then once the case get affirmed, they move you to the federal prison because you're under federal.
Wow. And how many years?
So in Leavenworth, I end up spending 5.5.
Wow.
And then I got transferred to Forest City, Arkansas federal prison, where I end up spending the last 2.5 years.
Wow. What's the difference between Leavenworth and Forest City?
Leavenworth is stricter. Especially back then, it was... I don't know if you guys ever watched the movie The Castle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how it was in the beginning back then. Cuz they tore that old prison down, but it was just like that because the prisons are built like Alcatraz.
Yeah.
So everything is like tear up.
Yeah.
And then you get in there and it's still
crazy.
Wow. Yeah, and you like mentally it'll break you.
Down.
So you got to be strong.
Yeah.
First 4 years probably was like hell, man. And that's when I talk to the kids now. That's what I tell them, that the closest thing to hell on earth is being in a prison, being told what to do, what time to do it, on top of trying to protect yourself.
And then
in the midst of being like around animals, you become one. Survival,
in the jungle, right?
And you lose a little bit. You know, we've interviewed several that I'm talking done sometime, 40, 50 years in Angola and got out. And it's, you know, when they got out, I'd be curious to know if your situation was the same, but things that you would never notice as a free person, when you get out of prison after that long of a stint, something like woman's perfume. You know, one of the guys that came on said, I went in Walmart. It's one of the first things he did with his mom to get his clothes, get him new clothes and stuff like that. And he said, a woman walked by me and I caught a whiff of that perfume. And I ain't smelled perfume in 30-something years. And I was like, crazy. Oh, my God, what is that? You know, it was like using the restroom. And at least in Angola, a lot of these guys would keep one leg in the pants and one leg out. That way, if you get jumped and you're right, on the toilet, you don't get tangled up in your pants. And he said, to this day, I still use the restroom like that. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's ingrained.
Part of being institutionalized.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta mentally break that. Because some of those things are hard. Like you always on alert, and me and my wife talk about that now. Things that happen, and she'd be like, listen, I need you mentally here with me.
Yeah.
Because some stuff, like I said, I got locked up young. So you still always on alert, and it's like, all right, I can relax now.
But shout out to your wife for that.
Yeah. But because you already went through hell, it's like ever feel like you want to let your guard.
And I started out in corrections and ended up, you know, working cell blocks and stuff like that. But certainly my situation wasn't as dire as yours was, but when I got out of corrections, I'd find myself walking up to a door and waiting for somebody to open them for me. Buzz it open.
Pop it.
Institutionalized, basically. I'm glad you made it and you're safe, right? How was it, your mom and dad? When you were down federal time, that's a long way.
It hurt them. I didn't know how bad it hurt them because as men, we don't show emotions. Right, so dad never showed emotions. He just was always asking me if I was okay and that he loved me. And then mom, once I started getting programmed into taking the classes and my attitude changed and I would be happier, then she understood that I was okay. So it got easier. But they never had the money at that time to travel.
That's what I'm saying. That's a long way. Yeah. I mean, most people don't have the money to travel that far. Shout out to your mom and dad.
But when I got out of the military prison and transferred in a federal prison, it was like we were released.
Mm-hmm.
Like night and day. So when you get to the feds and I'm like, why are these guys crying? Like you just came from where I just came from. Dude. This is like freedom.
Right. Yeah, you got married over here.
What? So, and then when I get there, I get baptized. So this is when I first learned to believe in God.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I get there, I was supposed to stay for longer than my stint.
Right.
But because it was overcrowded, I ended up coming home like a year early.
God turned you loose.
Right.
So I was like, bless somebody else. Awesome.
This incident that we're going to get into, this murder of your brother, were you in prison when this occurred?
Yeah, I was in Leavenworth when this happened.
So let me ask you that, and I'll just say stuff that pops in my head. So I've done like death notifications of like parents and grandparents and stuff like that to inmates or what have you. What was it like? And I certainly don't know about a military prison. If you don't mind talking about when they came and told you what happened and what do you remember?
So at first I thought it was like a bad dream.
Yeah.
So it was my brother who called, the one who was in Desert Storm. So the duty chaplain, the one who actually come get you.
And then,
so he popped my cell. It's like maybe 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
And then he popped the cell, and I wasn't used to that either.
Right, and especially not 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
So I'm thinking other stuff, like what's going on. But when I get there, it was like he brings me out of the unit and on a bench, and he was like, I have something to tell you. And the way he was talking, I knew it was death. I just didn't know who. So I assumed it was my parents at first, one of the parents. He was like, your brother Walter just called here, and your brother Steve was killed. So I was like, what? Like, it seemed unrealistic.
Didn't register. Yeah.
So they let me call. And then when I call, I can hear my mom screaming in the background.
Oh, man.
And then it was my cousin who actually grabbed the phone because no one else could talk. And then told me what happened. And I was like, wow, seriously? Like, it was still, like, unreal.
Shock, huh?
And it's and you're locked up at this point.
Right.
It's not like, you know, the normal everyday response to that is I got to go to mama's house, you know, and be with the family. It must have really killed you that you just didn't have that option.
Yeah, you know? Because sometimes if you got the money, they will let you go home because you got to pay for security. Yes, when I say home.
Transport
for, security. Yeah, to the funeral.
Yeah.
Right.
But nobody had the money, so it's like you can't go. But they want you to pay for transportation, for the security.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, that's what hurt me more than anything. Yeah. But as I got older, I realized it was good because I remember my brother with life in him and not that.
Remember the good.
Yeah.
And, wow.
And, you know, it came out eventually that C. Murder was the one charged with this, and we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But for the listeners out there that may not be as familiar as others, if there's some out there, No Limit Records was a label that was started by Master P, Percy Miller. He built that company. The Millers came from the Calio Projects, and that is a tough part of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And actually built a absolute empire. Signed Snoop Dogg, Silk the Shocker is one of his brothers, of course, C-Murder, one of his brothers, himself. So they were legit. As a matter of fact, at one point, they were, you know, I would say Suge Knight and West Coast Rap was behind them, at least in money. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Diddy.
Right.
A big deal, to say the least. So you find out at some point that C. Murder has been arrested for this. Did you have kind of a heads up ahead of time that he was involved?
Yeah, so when I had talked to my cousin that night, we had another cousin that was in the club. She never came forward. She still don't want to talk because of the reputation that those guys had. So she was afraid.
Sure.
So, but she was like, it was a C. Murder concert, and she was like, Steve was killed. And I'm like, what do you mean? See, Murder concert, Steve was killed. And she was like, they saying that he did it. And she's crying and she don't want to talk to me.
Anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
So my other cousin grabbed the phone and I'm like, what's going on? And then she tells me they leaving the club. She didn't go, the one who I'm speaking to now, but she stopped at a gas station and the DJ came and they were like, what's going on? What's happening? They saw the commotion. And a DJ said, OC Murder just shot a little dude in a club.
Yeah. Streets talk.
Right. So, and all of this is in the beginning. Yeah. So that's why I was like, man, the fans, you fans, you don't know the difference. You only know what you being told and what was put out there. But I'm like, no, man, these are the facts. This is the stuff that happened. And all this stuff is documented. Right. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah. Wow. And,
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Let's talk about your brother. So he was 16 when this happened. And he was actually, you know, from what I've read and learned through documents, there was a rap contest going on, a battle.
Yeah, they said it was a rap battle. And the way the hip-hop scene works, so if I'm a promoter and I have a club and you're my artist, I'm going to say we have a rap battle, but I'm going to make sure that you win this battle because you're my artist.
Right.
But it's not designed to the public to look like that. It's designed to be like that you came from nowhere and I just signed you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they had going on that night. I didn't understand that part of the business until later.
Okay.
And my brother supposedly out-rapped whomever C-Murder artist was or whoever his artist was going to be. And then that's where the argument started from.
Yeah. That's what I heard. What's on the, maybe a document or something. Mm-hmm. That's what they had said, that your brother out-rapped him. And his people went off. His crew went off on him.
So tell us a little bit about your brother.
Man, I don't know to rap him. Yeah. The Steve that I know was like a ladies' man.
Yeah.
Really?
Sounds like me.
So ever since junior high school and then that era, and I'm like every time I talk to him, I got this girl. And it didn't matter, black, white, Asian, Hispanic.
No discrimination on that.
So to hear like he was into the rap, it still wasn't a shocker, but it was more so I remember him as a ladies' man.
Right, a guy that wasn't so much of, he wasn't living that life, per se.
Right. He had the S curls, you know, that was the thing at the time with the little baby bangs here, looking like those dance group guys.
let me ask you another stupid question pop in my head, but I like to know about this kind of stuff. So your daddy was full time chef, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know your mama could cook some good food.
Right.
What was your brother's favorite meal?
So he liked me and his meal. My mom's spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah. Dad's gumbo, but mom's spaghetti and meatballs.
Wow, that's crazy. That's awesome. And she did like that.
She would take
my mom made the spaghetti, but she never made the meatballs. It was just had the meat all through it. She would. Do real meatballs?
Yeah, real meatballs with the ground meat. She still cooked like that till this day.
That's awesome. Making me hungry. So, okay, what's the worst trouble y'all ever got in together?
The worst, probably.
If you want to say it.
No, I'll tell you. I don't mind.
Well, what's the worst whooping?
Whooping. So, siblings, you know, we always argue.
Right.
Like Cain and Abel, we always argue. So we were arguing, and mom had just bought like this perm kit or something. And she was like, if you break it, then I'm going to whip your asses.
Right.
And we still not listening to her, and we fighting, and then we break it. And then she comes back with like this belt, and
a belt or a switch or whatever, an extension cord.
That probably was the worst whipping.
Yeah. So those are the things that you remember, right? And you know, it's boys being boys, and I've got three brothers, and I get it, right? So anyway.
Yeah, and Woody used to be a big old boy. He was like 330 at one point.
Yeah.
Offensive lineman.
Yeah. Different days. Different days.
I need your diet. Yeah.
So I'll give you a thyroid fix. All right. You're down, you get notified that he's been murdered, right? And then and it's still some years before you get released.
Five years later.
So it's a while. So and I know that I always say that the wheels of justice turn slowly, but can you paint it for me like a movie, what happened during this time?
When I first hear
what are you hearing about? Streets
C-Murder,
talking?
When I first hear C-Murder's name, I'm like, is this real? Because I'm still unsure, and I know everybody that come to prison got a million stories.
Right.
So I don't know what's real. So then when I'm watching MTV was out at the time. You know how they used to be breaking news, right?
Yeah.
And they were like arrested at whatever the club was in New Orleans. I think House of Blues, outside the House of Blues. And I was like, wow, it is real.
Yeah.
So then I'm watching it. And at this time, Master P wasn't the Master P now. I mean by mannerism.
Right.
So I'm watching it, and he's like, I try to reach out to this family, and this family just want money, and he's saying this on 106 in Park. And I'm like, this guy don't know nothing about us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hot, but I'm still calling home trying to see what's going on. He don't get trialed until, a year later or something like that.
I think it was over a year. But you didn't know those.
And that was a 12-0 conviction, which a lot of people tend to forget. They still want to harp on the latest 10-2. But right, the first one was 12-0.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't a home jury.
And then the guy, Peanut, when I came home, the one who testified at the first trial, the second trial as well, he told exactly what happened before anyone else would talk.
Yeah. So you're still down and the trial comes up. What kind of coverage could you get on it other than like through family over the phone?
Yeah, that's what it was. Family over the phone and what the news was, what MTV and BET was watching.
And
I honestly, and I'm going to be honest, because my mindset was like, I'm thinking, OJ, like you got money, you're going to walk.
The whole world believes you did it, but you're going to walk.
And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, certainly he had the money and the backing, but it wasn't the case.
Correct. Right? So after the conviction, and then they telling me that the guys who testified and everything that happened, and then I was like, okay, it's over. But then it wasn't over, because then it gets a retrial, and I'm like, how does this happen? Yeah,
that's where the money stuff comes in.
So, right.
And how did that happen?
That happened from Master P in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But what happened legally was the judge, Martha Sassoon, said that the DA was withholding evidence that the witnesses had a dirty background, speeding ticket or something, and one of them was facing another charge. So she said because that didn't come to light,
Brady violation.
Right.
She's saying that had the defense had that in their ammo pouch,
they could have used it he's not a reliable witness. Right.
And then later she gets in trouble and she had to step down. I don't know if you know her story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So everyone already knew she was dirty from that instance.
Right. Yeah. And so he gets the second trial and you're still down, right?
Right. I'm out for the second trial.
All right. Tell me about that.
So when I come home, when I first come home, Peanut used to run with my cousin BJ. So Peanut was one of the guys, the witnesses whom everyone's saying changed their story. So he comes to me personally and he said, hey, this is what happened, and tells me exactly what happened. That it was a fight that at the end of the fight, see, murder raised up his shirt while looking at him as the bouncer. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, you got him. And he was like, okay. And he's looking like this, but steady raising his shirt, and then stands over him and shoot him.
Yeah.
And it's important to note that, or at least I think it is, originally it was reported that these individuals that jumped your brother in there had CP3 shirts on, hoodies.
Yeah.
And that is the
Calio Project.
Basically the logo, if you will. So that would point certainly to his group for sure.
Well, and then the police during the investigation, I mean, it came out and like I said, the streets talk, and then people said it was his crew.
Yeah. And look, see, murder was already in trouble in Baton Rouge.
Right.
Club Rags, he actually tried. Right. You remember Club Rags?
And that was on video.
That was on video. Yes. The only reason it didn't go off was because of James.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, a couple of instances, and sometimes you do have to consider when you're looking at somebody for a possible murder. Well, what has their behavior been lately?
Right.
And that incident coming, prior to that, was certainly an indication.
And then his best friend, Wango, he the one who put all the dots together.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing that Peanut said. And those two don't run in the same circle. Right. One was a football player. One was a real gangster.
Right.
So,
the one thing that never changed, though, George, is truth.
Right.
Yeah. And so when you work an investigation like that, and of course it's going to be high profile right off the bat, not because your brother, the victim, but because when the starts, they're going to be like, holy shit. An ape. That's what we used to call it, an acute political emergency. You know, you're going to get the news hounds. You know you're going to be under the microscope. You know it's going to go to trial, and you know, no defense attorney is going to plead their client to life in prison, which is what second degree murder gets you, and they didn't do it as far.
But he was offered 20 years.
Yeah, but so that's what I'm saying. They don't put the death penalty on the table immediately,
mm-hmm.
and the only reason they do that is generally to get it dropped down to second degree murder without a trial. You
right.
just plea out mm-hmm. and said execute me. But then they know if you charge them second degree murder, you're going to trial. But the defense attorney also knows, I'm gonna get my client a deal, or at least right. an offer of a deal. And so they offer him 20, and he still got the big head.
Yeah, so like, when they offered him 20, he said, I'm not, his exact words was, I'm not taking shit. I'm not taking 20 minutes. Yeah, they have nothing on me.
Yeah, and then joke was on him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's all comes up. It comes from the upbringing and the lifestyle and thinking that you're untouchable. You know, you get away with the club rags.
And the drugging, too, because he had the heroin.
Yeah,
and
what they, I mean, they're making the money. Yeah, more than just
the rock star, life.
Exactly. Yeah. And there were rumors that night that he was actually drugged out.
Yeah, on heroin, right?
Yeah,
and even now, till this day, I don't know if you guys follow it, but I follow like everything. So Suboxone? So who takes Suboxone? Ex-heroin addict.
Yeah.
And just couple months ago, he shot heroin in Angola. He was in a hole twice.
Really?
Trying to OD.
I didn't know that.
I saw that. This is the stuff they never
put out for obvious reasons.
They had a lot.
They still want for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
When he was in a hole and everybody was like, what's going on and what happened? Trying to say that he was trying to commit suicide, but that's what it was. It was the heroin.
He was banging heroin, and if that had got out, then Kim Kardashian then wouldn't.
Right, and I'm like, why this stuff doesn't get out?
Right. Well, but they get out, control media what they want to get out.
A lot of the proponents against, see, murder didn't do this. The people that say that. They used that 20-year where he didn't take that 20-year plea because he'd be out by now if he would have took that plea. They say, an innocent man, that's why he didn't take that plea. He's an innocent man, right? This proves, you know, and I think Woody just brought up a good point, which is arrogance will screw you a lot. And I think he just thought just what he said. You don't have anything on me. And I got a lot of money, and I can fight this thing and not do one day.
He's thinking,
much less 20 years.
Go back to the lifestyle, and he's thinking, my crew's not going to rat on me. Right. I'm not going to rat on them. And, you know, witnesses,
but they did.
Can't take the stand.
Yeah,
and I was guilty and didn't take a plea trial, so I'm like, that argument is shot.
There you go.
Don't mean you're innocent, right? Yeah.
It just means you think you're going to walk.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy, man. But, you know, think about different lifestyles. Let's say it's a doctor, and I used to have the contract with the state of Louisiana to I do polygraphs also, to do the doctors and the nurses that got in trouble. Man, you wouldn't believe they would get put on probation, like, by the medical board, right? And every 3 months, I'd have to test them to see if they were following the rules of probation. You wouldn't believe the stuff they're doing. But the thing is, it's whether you come from the projects or you come from Harvard Medical. I think there's a certain you're inside your own little certain world,
right?
And then you're like, this is my world. I own this motherfucker, and they can't touch
nobody.
Me.
Nobody can touch me.
Here comes Woody. I'm gonna put a polygraph on you, and you're gonna lose your doctor's license, right? They offered him 20. He's like, spin it.
Did he ever take a polygraph? Have you ever heard of him?
I haven't heard of him taking a polygraph.
Yeah, well,
I just know I don't think he did, but again, I'm not 100% sure.
I would imagine that
would have come out.
If he was my client, I would have told him don't. Take
the polygraph. He didn't even want to take the snake. It was more arrogance of, thinking he was going to walk.
Let's talk about that if you don't mind. So you're out for a second trial. Tell me about the trial. What your thought on the process is. What is it like to sit there and look at him in the courtroom every day?
So it was hatred in the beginning. And I'm going to be honest, like I said, I didn't even know. So I was like, did he do it? Didn't he do it?
Right.
Because you hear all of these different stories. Mm-hmm. So even with my cousins, I'm like, you would tell me something, but you don't want to talk to the police. And I didn't get. So I was like, let me do my own investigation.
Right.
So with Peanut telling me what he told me and then Wango saying what he said and taking a plea trial, I'm like, well, this part has to be true. But I still went in unbiased, and I was like, I want to hear everything. Mm-hmm. So the part that really got to me when they were talking about how they jumped him, then I probably would have been on YouTube where the guy get up and jump in court. Like, that's the hatred that I had at the time.
Right.
And it was like so much anger.
And you know what? And it gets back to the lifestyle. Brother's no reason to jump your brother. He was 16 years
old.
And it, like, what pride do you get out of five or however many dudes jumping a 16-year-old and beating
him? Like you, you can't, one-on-one, you shouldn't be fighting a kid, still, but like and it takes all of you to do that.
There's no shame in having your ass beat by a crew, but then
you shoot him out of spite.
Shoot him over, but you didn't have to shoot him. He's already down.
Right.
You stand over and shoot him, and I hate to say this, but in, an execution style, bro. And that's just fucking wrong. I don't care who it is.
No doubt about it.
Or I don't care. I don't care how your brother was living. I don't care anybody in the world who it is. Nobody deserves to be executed like that. You know what I mean?
Right. And another thing that people bring up when they fight for this, to say that C. Murder did not do this, is they bring up an individual that admitted that he did the killing. So let's talk about that real quick.
Juan Flowers.
Yeah.
So Juan Flowers, 3 weeks before the second trial, Juan Flowers calls Jefferson Parish district attorney, his lawyer calls, and he said he wanted to admit to Juan Flowers killing my brother. So the DA was like, Juan Flowers was already serving a life sentence in Georgia.
Yep.
So you already down for a murder. Right. So you want to take this one. If you really did it, then okay, we accept your plea. But we want the death penalty because you's already serving life.
Right.
And then like 35 minutes later, he calls back and says, oh, no, it wasn't me.
Never mind.
I didn't do it.
I was just kidding. Yeah. And then, of course, that. I'm sure he wasn't telling the truth. But the deal being is once you do that, you call and say, hey, it's this way. And then they were like, oh, yeah, well, then we'll hit you with this, right?
Yeah, he said he was trying to derail the trial.
No, I was just playing. Yeah. That's exactly what he was doing. And, of course, think of the street cred he'd have got if he'd have got C. Murder out.
Right.
By saying he took the charge.
Charge
and he had nothing to lose at the time in his mind because I'm already in there for life.
Prison anyway. And Georgia life is life, right? So back to the trial part because so you're sitting there, you listen to it every day. Did you stay in when the autopsy and the crime scene photographs?
Yeah, every day I was there.
A lot of family members get up and leave. I tell my family members because every homicide victim I have, their families become my family, right? Mm-hmm. And when we go to trial, I'll be like, Mama, just step outside for a little bit, right? You don't need to see this. But so you sat through all of it.
Yeah, I sat through. I wanted to hear it. The hardest part. Yeah. Besides hearing when they jumped him, was when my dad had to get up there and talk.
Oh, tell me about that.
So he had to get up there and first tell how we were all No Limit fans.
Right.
And then how Steve would never go to a prom, how he would never be married.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's never going to see him.
Yeah, you never see the adult version. And that's like,
sad.
And my dad, like I say, he's a tough man, never show emotion. So when he breaks down like that, it was tough.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking, bro. And
what about threats? One thing with this case that I think about is there were a lot of people that spun stories and then recanted stories and some that, were threatened or claimed they were threatened.
So Peanut was threatened, the one – but he didn't change his story because of the threats.
Yeah.
He changed his story because he was trying to get into the music industry. And they were blackballing him as a snitch.
Yeah.
And this came out of his mouth as well.
Yeah. Hmm.
So when I talked to him about, I think the show was Reasonable Doubt. And I was in Texas.
Oh, that's right. That was right. Yeah. It was. Yep.
And I was in Texas, and I called him, and I was like, what's going on? Like, because I was aggravated, too. And he was like, calm down. There's a difference between Hollywood and real life. Yeah. But I was like, hey, your Hollywood antics is getting interfered with my family's real life.
Right.
And he was like, no, and telling me everything's scripted and it's going to be okay. Then he tell me what happened with him and the industry. And he still didn't go anywhere anyway. But for whatever reason, I was like, all right, I wasn't mad at him because I understand you wanted to be on that bad. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I know the truth. So he was threatened. And then even after, like, I never, and this the first time people who listening will hear me say this part. So his cousin, Peanut's cousin, was murdered in Kenner or Metairie.
Mm.
And he called Jefferson Parish Police to tell them who did it then and all the stuff that happened. So he was working great with the police, but it was just later when all of this other stuff came out, he wanted to make it seem like, I guess he was a C-murder advocate.
Yeah.
And like, that's what happened with him.
What about personally? Do you, you know, because I've seen several of your interviews and things that you've done with like BET and TMZ and some of these people. Were you ever, you know, I almost felt like, because I put myself in people's shoes and I'm like, man, he must feel like he's out on an island. There's so many, you know, he's fighting this big conglomerate.
In the beginning, I felt like I was out on the island.
Yeah.
Because the threats come more from like the fans.
Yeah.
The people that know, like, it's no threats for them. And, by the way, none of those people scare me either. So I would never, in my life.
You know, Woody told me one time when if someone's threatening you, they ain't doing nothing.
You don't have to worry.
People that do stuff don't threaten.
And it's all these fake profiles online. Yeah. So I already know. And then when Mr. Harry Lee was alive, he came to my parents' house. Personally,
he's a awesome guy. Dude, man.
I love Harry Lee, so I don't care what anybody says about Harry Lee. The man was for
right.
He was for right. If you did something and got in trouble, that was on you. So don't ever try to make that a race thing. He wanted rights, and he wanted to get right.
For sure. And the
so he came to the house and he said, "If anyone threatens you, come here, and you feel like you in home, like do what you have to do." And he gave my daddy 9mm 45 from the sheriff's office itself. And was like, take care of your family and your responsibilities.
Amen. Well, and shout out to you for being, I guess you could say, I don't know if you call it the spokesman for your family, but the person, the front face for your family and taking that on.
I had to because I got tired of hearing that C. Murder was innocent and C. Murder was railroaded. So hearing that for 20 years, like, takes a toll on a person. And I'm like, maybe they don't know the truth. Maybe they don't know the facts. So let me give them the facts. And like I said, you still have his diehard fans that's going to say he was innocent. But that's just ignorant, because if you see facts in front of you and you don't want to listen— then your fight is not with me. Your fight is with God and with yourself, because you are dead ignorant.
That's right. And let me tell you, Percy Miller, I know a lot. I've done a lot of research on him and have a lot of respect for him and what he's done in the music industry. And he's a businessman. Now, make no mistake, he's no dummy. Right. He's very smart. He pulled off what I consider a miracle to be able to do what he did, and I got mad respect for him for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think C. Murder is an amazing rapper. Right. I thought he was great at what he did, probably the best of them all as far as No Limit was concerned, in my opinion. And I think it's a shame that he ended up where he's at.
Right.
But that doesn't mean he didn't do it.
Right. And
don't confuse
Percy now. That's why when I spoke earlier and I say then, Master P now actually reached out personally to me and apologized. So I have much respect for Master P. He didn't have to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So he reached out, apologized to me and my family, and also stated that C. Murder is where he needs to be. He said he asked C. Murder who pulled the trigger. C. Murder told him he's not a snitch and he got to live on the streets and all of this stuff. He said that's the day he washed his hands with him. So he believed either C. Murder was the trigger man, or C. Murder knows who was the trigger man and don't want to talk. Say either way, he where he needs to be until his mind changes.
That's huge, huh?
And I struggle to, you know, when you're 23 and you go down for murder, I could see you saying something like that.
Right.
When you're 43 and you've been in there as long as he has, I don't buy the code anymore.
Yeah, me neither. And you're almost 50 and you got daughters that you claim you want to get out here to.
Yes, beautiful daughters. I mean, a beautiful family.
Right.
Brothers. All these things, and you're going to sit in jail for the rest of your life for something that you didn't do because you won't name someone else because of a code?
Right. The dumbest thing in the world. I don't buy it either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I saw his daughters and all that stuff too. And of course, nobody wants to believe their loved one.
No.
Is wanting to do that, even though that was, I'm sure it was a dope fueled. Shitty decision, mm-hmm. and probably hopefully it's one that he wants to take back every day. But go back to your brother, bro. He was a fan, right? And got brutally murdered.
I'm sure everybody at that time in New Orleans, especially that were in that rap game and mm-hmm. or ran with those that were, I'm sure all of them looked up to what No Limit was doing. I mean, that was not a hidden story in New Orleans. That was, hey, we can get out. We can, not only can we get out, we can build empires.
It gave everyone inspiration. Yeah,
it's just it really is a total fucking shame that your brother lost his life over this, and all of these other people were impacted over stupidity. Just a split, seems like a split second decision, or just plain stupid stuff, foolish games that kids play. And so many people have been impacted, and it's frustrating because obviously your brother had some talent. Heck, he's out there out rapping everybody.
Right.
You know, Pretty Boy, wearing curls, and the ladies' man. And
that's the other part that pissed me off, too, when they said, oh, what was a 16-year-old doing in the club? So we were fans. Man. We were fans.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, like anybody would have snuck out that night to 100%. Get in that club. And this was a teenage club, which people fail to forget. Yeah.
I was in clubs when I was 16.
Me too.
Just how we rolled in those days.
Right. I'm like, no, everybody like did it. I'm like, no, but you missing the fact that it was a teenage club for one. But two, like even if he was in there, he snuck in there. I'm like, that doesn't take away from the murder. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
That's absolutely
That's getting lost in the semantics of things and not looking at the facts. And we talked a little bit before the show, but I wanted to impress this point again on air, and that is, you know, to me, when you are in a position like see murder was in, where he had pretty much unlimited money. I mean he could fight this as far as he wanted to take it with the best attorneys he could have. And you look at the prosecutors in this case who knew what they were facing, as Woody brought up earlier. Mm-hmm. This is an acute political emergency. We got to make sure all T's are crossed and I's are dotted. In that situation, if he did not do it, it would have come out some kind of way.
Right.
If he did it. And the only thing that's going to stop him, he had unlimited money. He could have got out even if he did it in a lot of cases.
Right.
So if he's still sitting in jail, there must have been a lot of evidence there to convince some juries.
Yeah, well, the thing about it, too, I mean, they got him the mistrial, right? Mm-hmm. The judge, for whatever reason. And then you go back again, and so you got a double shot and putting on the best defense in the world with the best money in the world. And it's got more national attention. And get convicted again.
And at that point, you already know the prosecutor's case.
Right.
Because they've already done it.
They've already set all the cards.
And then, so if you're a defense attorney.
And then you go down and you got all your appeals and you got all these famous people, you know, for whatever reason, jumping on the bandwagon, trying to ride it out, trying to ride the story. And I mean, you know, I don't even think it should be about that dude, bro. It should be about your brother.
That's right.
And your family.
Well, it is about.
Well, right. I, you know what I'm saying. That,
right. Yeah.
But that your brother is not the one that gets the constant, other than him being the murder victim. They don't say, hey, he loved my mama's spaghetti and meatballs.
Right.
You know what I mean? He loved my daddy's gumbo. He was a ladies' man. And, you know.
And he grew up.
Got to make it about the victim.
Yeah. And I'm not mad at the fans. The fans are fans. So yeah, I'm like, no, you're going to do what you do.
Right.
Most of them are just ignorant to the facts.
Right.
And I mean, I don't mean that in a condescending way. You've got to take time to research and read the actual file. It's online.
Right.
You can pull it up.
I put it out there. Yeah. They still don't read it.
Yeah. I mean, that, and then make up your own mind on what you think. But if you get 12 people in a room, most, the vast majority are going to say, looks like this guy did it. Take C. Murder, the rapper, out of it and just say Corey Miller. And don't put the esteem behind him and see what decision you come up with.
Yeah.
That would be, I mean, that would be my advice. And that's how I tried to approach it.
Totally different ball game on that level, right?
Now, what, you know, what did you think when Kim Kardashian decided she wanted to start fighting for Corey Miller? What was your thoughts on
that? So my initial thoughts, because I get a call from NAACP. And I was willing to talk to him. My parents wasn't willing to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And one of them that I truly respect, and I say his name because he was never disrespectful. I never said his name before, but Mr. Eugene Collins. So he was real respectful. He said he lost his brother. He understands. He was trying to make amends. Asked me, did my parents ever get what they would just do from their lawsuit? I said, no, it wasn't about money, but what's right is right. So I don't want it to seem like they're begging for something that's already theirs.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I said, so they never received the money. On top of, you got to hear that this guy is innocent and all the other BS that come with it. So Mr. Eugene was like, he's going to try to right or wrong no matter what happens. So he reached out. And I haven't heard anything back as of late because he stepped down from the Baton Rouge chapter.
Yeah.
But he said he would try to do what's right on that aspect.
Sure.
And then I hear from, what's his name? Haley, I think the attorney.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Right. So then this guy comes and then this guy... and I hope you're listening, sir. This guy is like so full of crap, it pissed me off. So he tells me that it's a videotape out there. The same videotape that Wango said he was paid to destroy. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if it's a videotape, then why won't you give the videotape to the judge, the powers that be? This will free him if it shows that he didn't do it.
Right.
Even if he was an accomplice with the fight and he didn't pull the trigger.
Right.
So he tells me that I'm willing to show you and the family the videotape, but I'm not willing to show it to the courts.
And it's an attorney, you said?
Yeah.
Haley?
Yeah.
Out of Baton Rouge?
Yeah.
Ron Haley?
That's him. Yeah. Ron Haley. Mm-hmm. So he says that it's a videotape. So I'm like, wait, you willing to show me a tape, which means I'm NIT now, which means it's documented probably to look like that, but you're not willing to show it to the powers that be? In order for him to come home, like, that doesn't even make sense to me.
Dog don't hunt.
And he said, okay, we can, he can raise enough money to give to your family, but he would need to be out here to raise the money. So I'm like, you're talking to me like I was born yesterday.
Right. They want you and your family to come back and say that he's innocent, let him out, give me whatever.
Right.
Just so you can get a payday.
Right.
And you know what?
Mm-mm. And my point was, if it's about the payday, they should have got the payday,
right,
whether he comes home or not. But that lets me know that your intentions wasn't pure.
Yeah.
And that's what like pissed me off more than anything as well. And but Mr. Eugene, he stayed respectful. So I respect him the way that he respected me. The other guy was not so.
I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm pretty sure I'd be telling the prosecutor. Somebody said they had a videotape.
Well, I'll tell you this. I just met Mr. George Thomas today. Well, he just met him today.
Yeah,
but I can tell you that if Mr. George Thomas thought anybody else had done this other than C. Murder, he would say so.
Yeah, I would.
There is no advantage to throwing shade on C. Murder for you.
Right.
You want the right man in jail more than anybody.
And I even reached out to him. He never responded back for whatever reason. I'm not upset. But I was like, hey, I just want you to know I personally forgive you. I wouldn't be able to talk about this.
Right. Yeah.
So I said, hey, your fight is with God. Whatever demons you got, that's who you'll fight with. Your fight is not with me.
Right.
I said, do right by my parents. Everything else would come right. So,
yeah.
And you got crickets, I guess.
Huh? Yeah. Nothing but crickets. Like I said, the only one who spoke nice was Mr. Eugene Collins. And then Percy Miller, Master P, for reaching out. And I have nothing but the greatest respect for Master P for doing that because he didn't have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the rest of them, I'm like, I don't understand the angle. And then they try to talk about this 10-2 to make it retroactive now.
And go back into trial.
Right. I'm like, you forgetting that he was convicted 12-0.
Right.
Like, I don't get it.
Wouldn't apply to him, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, they're going to do their job, which is to try to throw anything at the wall and make it stick to get him out and – oh, he's innocent, da-da-da-da, whatever. Yeah.
I have no doubt that he's probably remorseful right now. I honestly do believe that.
Every time he wakes up in Angola, he's remorseful.
That he's remorseful. I'm like, but, dude, like, just come to terms, man. If you come to terms, it's not only going to help my family, it's going to help you as well.
Yeah,
because you can't run away from the truth.
You know, a lot of George people I have, and I've put a lot of people in Angola, the ones that wouldn't confess, you know, oftentimes hope, like on their deathbed or something, they come to Jesus and give that family the relief. It's never going to take away the pain, but you know, say, you know what? Yeah, I did do it. I'm sorry. Yeah, and as a Christian man, and you told me you got baptized and saved and everything as a Christian man. I mean, obviously, you said that to him anyway. Take care of my, you know, do right what you're supposed to do by my parents anyway, because you took their son, and I forgive you. And that's huge. But then, of course, you know, none of us three were in the club, the going off of preponderance of evidence. Which is what it takes. This is not probable cause, which is 50% plus one, is beyond a reasonable doubt, which means there's people in that jury that they're beyond, it's not beyond all shadow of a doubt, it's beyond a reasonable doubt, which means a reasonable person can reach no other conclusion than that murdered your brother.
That's right.
Shout out to you for putting the human face on your brother.
Yeah.
Meatballs and Flair.
Thank you guys for having me, man.
Hey, I'm going to tell y'all something. The George didn't come here making any money today. You came here to do this, to tell your brother's story. That's love.
That's right. And what are you doing now? One thing also that I learned and we'll attach it. We'll even attach the link in our podcast, but he did another podcast that I enjoyed watching.
I watched it yesterday.
And in that podcast, you had told, you know, like you did today, your story and a little bit, but it's the redemption factor. You had a road you could go down. I mean, you know, like everybody else, you could have gotten out of prison and just continued maybe a hard life and made the wrong choices, or you could have made the right choices. You made the right choices, obviously. What are you doing now?
So now I do a prison ministry.
Oh, right? Wonderful.
And I talk to the juveniles.
Yeah.
What I call day job is I do IT work. A day job.
Okay.
And then what I do for what I call serving God is the prison ministry. So I talk to the juveniles. I talk to the guys who come from where I come from so they can understand that it's a difference.
Yeah.
And especially in jail, that's where your mind has to be made up at. In jail or prison, you're not going to do it no more. You can't wait until you get out of here.
Sure.
Which is why they either get out better or worse. It's never in between.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
And if your mind is still on bullshit, then that's what you're gonna get out to.
That's right.
But if it's okay, I'm never coming back here no matter what, then this is what I wanna do. And then you start honoring authority. So the two run hand in hand. And this is what a lot of those kids don't understand. So I said, man, I used to hate police. I used to say, I don't want to listen because this is the bullshit that's fed to you in these inner cities.
Yeah.
That it's the white man's fault. It's the police fault. Yeah. No, it's your fault. Go to school, get an education, and get away from here. And once you get a different mindset, that you are okay.
Yeah.
Hey, George, I worked for the Department of Corrections. Then after that, I was a supervisor at a juvenile detention center, which we all know they don't like to call them prisons.
Right, right.
And it wasn't a hug a thug program. They're all down for murder and rape and everything else. And so, I'm going to say this. I was born and raised Catholic, but didn't practice it. And in 1998, on a Sunday night, they had a prison minister. And it was a black lady. And Sister Shirley, Pastor Vicks, actually, but that she came in, and I was head of security and whatever, and they were getting the kids to put in the back room for church and in the new gym, right? And she said, "Hey, brother, I got God wants me to tell you something. If you're ready to listen," I said, "All right." I mean, I didn't think anything, right? She put me aside. She told me something that nobody in the rest of this world knows, and nobody on the world could know. And then she said, God said, don't give up on him. You know, I started following her around. I got rebaptized in 1998, and I was the only white guy in the black church in a swimming pool in the backyard. And I followed around. We traveled all around all the black churches. I was the only white dude in there. But you know, which back to what you were saying, those kids, and most of them were kids at the time from 11 to, you know, all the way up to 17. A lot of them, in fact, most of them, I would deal in my law enforcement career, especially when I'm made detective and then homicide detective. And it's the same ones. Now, every once in a while, I'd hear, hey, Sergeant Overton. And it'd be somebody that made the right path, you know. But that prison ministry, bro, it's huge, man. And a lot of kids would get out and go to her churches in Hammond and Church of God of Prophecy. And so do that work, bro. That is so. I mean, a lot of them are just trying to get out of the cell to get into the service, you know, or whatever. but some of them actually get touched. And then they're the ones that say, hey, Sarge, as an adult, and they're standing there with their family in Walmart or whatever, right? And give me a hug and saying, hey, man, thank you for treating me or whatever. So keep doing what you're doing, bro.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, man. It's what a story. And what he made alluded to a little bit of his story. And I do want to remind people that Jesus Help Me is out on paperback at Amazon. You can get it. He wrote a book about that.
And I didn't know that.
Also,
you'll like it.
I'm ordering it today.
You know, I'm going to get you a copy. I'm going to give you a copy. I wrote it on a dare years and years ago. I died on a table in 2009. And I always wonder if my high-risk victims, when they died, at that last second they called on Jesus, would he come and come for them? And he did it for me. I heard his voice, and I felt where he was touched, but I didn't get to see him. I wrote that book not to make money or anything off. Like, it was years later, and my old retired state trooper came back as a criminal investigator, had my outer office. He used to like bodyguard Governor Everts back in the day, so he was much older than me. But he was a big Christian guy. He was a big old swole guy. He was in the streets back in his young days that, a womanizer and that. But he was Christian now, and I told him the story, and everybody would come in, like his old. You know, head of state police, and send them in my office, and some of them would leave crying, and some of them would leave smiling, or whatever. I'd just tell them one-on-one. And he was like, Mark kept saying, man, you got to write that book. And I finally did it one day, and it's been up years and years, and I don't make any money off of it. I don't try to. I charge the lowest amount that they would allow me to, you know, have a platform. But yeah, I mean, God is real, but the devil's real too, bro. And we all know that. And the devil's a masterful warrior.
Amen.
And that's what happened, like, with this. Like, he tried to censor it. I'm like, okay, I don't want the story. I want the story out there.
Let it roll. Yeah. And you know what? Jesus is going to take care of you.
That's right.
And I wasn't there. You weren't there. Jim wasn't there. But it's been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And our court system may not be perfect, but it's the best in the world.
That's
and
right.
That's that. And the real shout out goes to you for standing up for your brother and to your mom and daddy. But one of my brothers got killed. And so, again, that's a club nobody wants to be a part of.
Yeah.
And my mama cries probably every day, and it's been 50 years.
Same,
and,
yeah, they and, never and, get and, over and, it.
It's a fresh thing, much more so. I mean, I know I can feel your pain, but for a parent, holy smokes. I don't know.
And my dad, man, my dad has Alzheimer's. And
we thank you for coming on. It's been awesome. And just pray for continued peace for your family as much as they can find, and for you. And it's just an honor to hear your brother's story and get some of the facts out there. And I'm going to make sure I link that case file in the description.
Thank you guys for having me. Let me ask you a question.
And this is not, y'all, this is not about money whatsoever. But when you're doing your prison ministry, mm-hmm. How do you find yourself?
With my day job, I don't make money.
I knew that, but I know because I used to do it, and I know it costs money for gas to go from your house to the detention center and whatever. So I didn't know if you had a way or that people could donate or something.
I could put a Cash App in a link, but I normally just normally my own money.
If somebody's listening out there and God wants to bless them, but we. Can we get to like
they can message us and I'll get them to
y'all because I'm getting the God bumps, goosebumps. Like I'll always if you want to help him try to help these kids from going to be housed at Angola or whatever,
Or making a better life for themselves when they get out.
You know, and if you out, I want to say something else before we go. And I want to say this to all the African Americans that are listening, because this is my pet peeve. And I was explaining to them before we even started. So when you get groups like the Black Coalition and NAACP, I always see these guys on high profile cases. I always see them when it's race cases. I never see you guys when it's the black kids behind the trigger or it's black on black crime. So this can't be one-sided. So if you claim that you're for the people and you're trying to help the people, then you need to be out trying to educate them and letting them know that education is the only thing that's going to cure that poverty mindset. And also you guys need to start fighting for what really is right and stop trying to twist the story. So the police are here to protect and serve, and that's their job. So if you're not going to protect and serve your own community, stop trying to spin a narrative that it's the police who are against the minorities and that we can't get ahead, because that's bullshit.
Amen.
Amen.
That's a straight up on up, right? And I mean, certainly there's bad cops, but there's bad doctors and bad
good and bad in every profession.
Good and bad in every profession. But that's powerful words, man.
That's it. And that's a good place to leave it.
I cannot thank you enough, and if anything comes up, we can maybe call and do a phone interview.
Yeah, man. Or if you back want, in town, you come in every now and then. Come on by, and we'll give an update.
Thank you guys for having me, brother.
And enjoyed it. Take care of your daddy and your mama.
Yes, sir.
I'm doing the same thing.
Yes, sir. All right.
And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
and Gola
Podcast, 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three. Die inside these walls.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.